podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to yet another edition of the Chelsea Podcast. I'm Chaz, and as ever, I am here with the mellifluous Mooch.
Wow, I'm going to need to Google what that means.
Yeah, I'm not sure myself, to be honest with you.
Is it a word?
Yeah. Okay. I had to pluck it out of me behind,
okay,
because I hadn't prepared anything. But you are mellifluous, mate. You're tuneful and gorgeous.
Wonderful.
How are you?
I'm great, and this is we're face to face.
We are. I almost feel like we should broadcast this because it's a summit meeting. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
we're here.
Like we're in some sort of underground
bunker,
panic room, yeah, situation room.
Yes,
in underneath the Thames.
Today the Chelsea podcast, tomorrow the world.
Yeah.
It's good to have you. It's good to be here, mate. Thank you for having us. Thank you for hosting us. And we're very, very happy to welcome back a gentleman who joined us earlier in the season. A very eminent character actor, comedian. All-round top bloke, Mike Grady. Mike, how are you?
Never in doubt.
Well,
I'm okay, thanks.
You have to check, don't you?
And thank you for that big intro. It gilds the lily quite a lot, but thank you very much for that. That's very nice to hear.
It's fully deserved. Your last appearance was magnificent, and we're hoping for great things from this one as well. So, gentlemen, how lovely that we're back. How lovely that we're back on the back of our most emphatic win this season. 6-0. Who saw that coming? Certainly not us.
No.
Last week, Fact fans, you may remember that we were talking about, some of us, I'm not going to mention names, but Mooch is pretty close, thought that we would be getting a draw and we'd concede and all this kind of stuff. I must admit, I thought we would concede. But a clean sheet, 6 goals, another Cole Jesus Palmer walking on water performance.
How are you going to fault him this week?
I'm not going to fault him. No, he was magnificent. And he was magnificent against Newcastle as well. Sometimes he's not magnificent.
Are you starting to drink Kool-Aid? Are you starting to come on? Before we sell him in summer when we need to?
Hey, listen, I'm not going, don't start me on this. Because I can't keep saying over and over, I think he's a great player. I just wasn't sure he was worthy of all of the absolutely fulsome praise that he was getting, but I'm starting to be turned. And, you know, as I've said before, we couldn't have done without him this season. And, you know, just by dint of the fact he knows where the goal is, for Christ's sake, that would make him essential to the team this year, if nothing else. But, I mean, it's been an absolute roller coaster this season, as we know. Mike, how is it possible, do you think, for us to go from a performance like the one we had against Sheffield United, which, let's face it, was disappointing, to the one we had on Monday night against Everton?
Well, I think it's a tactic. I think inconsistency is Pochettino's plot to fool the entire Premier League. It defeats everyone. Nobody knows. We know that Chelsea plays really well against teams that want to play football.
True.
And that they're very bad at unpicking teams that like to sit around in the box and field.
Agreed.
So I was surprised that Everton did that. I mean, they've been a bugbear over the years, and I think they're an excellent club, and we all expected maybe a draw, maybe they might nick it, but I was blown away after about the first, 5 or 6 minutes when, is it Beto, his name is that chap? How he missed that, I don't know, but it came off his thigh or something. Anyway, it was a moment, and I thought, okay, we're going to have that kind of game.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and just see how this works out. And
strap
then, of course,
in.
We saw what happened. Yeah, strap in. and off they went. But I couldn't possibly judge what the difference is. It's just, it may be subtle differences. It may be just on the day.
Yeah.
We don't know. They are getting better, don't you think?
Yeah, I do think so. And again, you know, the thing that everybody has said, and quite rightly so, is that consistency is clearly an issue. You know, and that is something that I'm absolutely certain is to do with the youth of the side and the comparative inexperience, not even so much as individual players, but playing together as a team. It's not just about the level of opposition. You know, Sheffield United are empirically the worst team in the league, and yet we found that game quite hard going. We should have won it still, but we found it quite hard going. But Everton, who have been better than Sheffield United as their league position shows, absolutely folded. And it was one of those games that was very odd because, as you say, you bring up the Beto moment, and I think we were a little bit lucky there because, as was pointed out by many people, Seamus Coleman absolutely, I think it was Coleman, absolutely belted the ball across to him. When actually a kind of a slightly better pass, it might have been a lot easier for him to get on the end of. But it was one of those where, if things hadn't gone quite as well for us, it could easily have been, you know, we could have gone in 1-1 at half time and not 4-0 up. However, everything seemed to coalesce. Everything did seem to come together. Mooch, it was a sort of statement lineup as well. It was, we had two absolutely out and out wingers.
Mm.
Connor. Playing, yeah, Connor, obviously because of Enzo's illness, Connor had to drop back to defensive midfield, which meant that Cole Palmer could play at number 10. And I like that. I've said that we should do with it. But do we keep that now? I think it's a very good argument to say we should. But then what happens when Enzo comes back?
Well, that's the problems you have when...
Yes.
You know, you're challenging for fifth, sixth. We're learning about this team who are very new together. Caicedo had a great game.
Yes.
And maybe, you know, having someone with a bit more energy next to him and being a bit more of a dynamo there allowed him to sort of flourish. Cole Palmer obviously had a fucking great game. Perfect hat trick and then a penalty.
Well.
That first goal.
Yes. I mean, it was very, very gorgeous. And Mike, this is one of the frustrating things about us this season, isn't it? We are capable, we are capable of a thing of beauty like that. And yet it's so... frustratingly rare, but it was all about moving the ball quickly, not giving defenders the time to settle, moving into space, moving into the right space, just stuff that clearly the guys can do, but they just don't do it enough. So, what did you make of that first goal? It was a beaut.
Well, I thought they played a bit like they did against Man U. They were going to the man. They were going to the ball. Where the ball was, they went, and they did, as you say, there was one tuck, bosh. I thought they showed individual class and encouraging signs of there being a team. One of the things that I've been asking my colleagues around me, my friends around me, is what do they do all week? Because we start off with this wonderful sort of lineup of usually four at the back and then a few more up, and they're all spread out. And the whistle goes and they disperse.
All over like there's the been pitch. A fire alarm.
Like there's been a fire alarm. And I go, what? And I have to ask grown-ups, and I say, what? I say, what shape are we? And they say, well, I see a lot of shrugging. Going, I don't know. Don't ask me. And I don't think we were much better at that the other day. We seemed to lose our wonderful sort of shape very quickly. Other teams keep that formation and move up and down the pitch like dancers. But we just burst out like a firework. Honest to goodness, if I knew that, I'd
let you know.
I probably would. I'd put money on it.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody. I'm listening to people on various radio stations, and I'm listening to people around me and talking to friends, and we all have our little sort of, you know, pocket-sized theories. But I'm not an economist, I'm not a strategist, I'm not a manager, I'm not even a footballer. So I haven't a clue what they do when they get down there. Or the only parallel I've got is I work in the theatre, and we rehearse a play, and we do this thing, and every now and then somebody on a particular night will do something very different, and you've kind of got to be prepared to go with it. And I think what's happening with a lot of teams, this team in particular, they don't listen. They aren't listening to each other. Communication between them isn't happening. And I just wonder if maybe there's something in that.
But you know what? That's a really good analogy, because when that works in theatre, and being a sometime thespian myself, I know whereof you speak. When that works in theatre or even in comedy, it's usually because people are in tune with each other, and that possibly comes with more. That comes with time. I mean, it can happen. I think it can happen organically, but it does come when you know how someone works. I think it's a lot easier to do that when you trust each other. And maybe that's what's happening. As you say, it can. You know, formations and what have you. I felt like at the Man United game, formation went way out of the window. It was just, you know, we were bombing on, and then we'd give the ball away and it would go to come straight back down the other end.
And that's 1970s.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch on a point you said there where you feel that the players don't listen.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think you're right, because I think also it's to do with the age of the squad. And a perfect example of this is the penalty fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know? So obviously there is a message there. They all know who... I know who takes the penalties.
Yeah.
I've not done a training session for a while. And but because 4-0 up, there was back and forth and an embarrassing sort of playground spat.
Mm.
And that must be frustrating as the manager. And if it's happening for something like a penalty...
Yep.
It's got to be happening with other aspects of the tactical instructions that are being delivered to the team.
Well, what was most annoying about it for me, I mean, I like the fact that there's, you know, people are keen to take, to get a goal. You know, I mean, Jackson's come out and said, "Oh, it's because I've made a pact with myself to get 15 goals this season, and I've only got 13, and I really want to get those goals." You know, but what was the most? I mean, the ugliness about it was that there was shoving. I mean, there was sort of seemed to actually be kind of anger and annoyance. And you think, come on, lads, Christ almighty, you're with what was it? We were 3 or 4 up at the time. We were 4 up at the time.
Mm.
And it's like, you don't need to be doing this. You don't need to be arguing the toss. There'll be other opportunities. Yeah. And as you say, it should be clear enough to everybody. There's one penalty taker. And if he chooses to give the ball to somebody else, then that's on him. But, you know, if it hadn't have been 4-0, there wouldn't have been any argument about it, I presume. What did you make of it, Mike?
I think it came out of the game. I one of the things I've noticed over the this season is the lack of intuition. I mean, it's still another analogy with theatre, but intuition comes with lots and lots of practice and lots of playing together, actually playing and giving other people opportunities, making opportunities for other people. That's how it works. That's how the whole thing works. But I see it a lot at Man City, where they become selfless for seconds at a time, but they are, and they will do it, and they see a better opportunity than they've got, and they will pass the bloody ball. So I'm not going to do too much pearl clutching about the incident it seemed to go on a very long time while we were there, and we were at the far end away from that goal, so we couldn't hear anything, but it was obvious what was happening. And yeah. I came home and watched it. I watched the highlights, and I thought, blimey, that was... And even that didn't give you the whole story.
Sure.
But I think watching it, I felt as though I'd been given a glimpse behind the curtain, a slight lifting of the mask, and yeah. I thought, wow, this tells me a huge amount about what Pochettino has had to deal with this season. And that we're dealing with a lot of monster egos. We're dealing with a lot of people who have been cost a great deal of money. And I think that Cole Palmer didn't cost as much as most of the others. I don't know how many millions he cost.
He was 40 million.
Yeah, but he was 40.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're paying 115 million for some of these people.
Yeah,
I mean, don't know. These egos are...
To be fair, I think both Jackson and Madueke came for less than that. However,
yeah.
I mean, I was less... As I say, I don't mind a bit of... I don't mind people wanting to take the pen.
I want it. I want that hunger. I want someone to be like, I back myself. I want to get this goal, especially from a striker.
Absolutely. And I don't mind that. What I mind is then acting like a spoilt bloody child when after you don't get... Exactly. Yeah. I mean, after the pen, he didn't celebrate it. He sort of half-heartedly wandered over eventually. And this is the thing that bothers me. It's great that you're disappointed that you're not getting the goal. It's not great that we're having pushing and shoving and you're carrying it around with you for the rest of the game, you know.
I've got to say, I did think that his goal was a masterclass.
Yeah.
The pass from Cucurella, he trapped it, spun and scored. I was thrilled for him. I really was. Because last time I was on the podcast, I made a complete arse of myself and I said, I think possibly that we had then not long played the friendlies in America.
Mm.
And I said, we might have in a couple of seasons another Drogba on our hands. Yeah.
We may do.
Yep.
Well, we may do. We don't know. But there isn't much evidence so far, really. But yeah, we may do. And my other choice was Mudryk, who I think has improved, bulked up, and is, when he chooses to, he's a ferocious player.
Mm.
I think they are amazing.
I want to argue your point there. If Drogba's first season didn't get as many goals as Jackson's had, was in a purring Chelsea team that was littered with stars and was playing in a Premier League that wasn't anywhere near as competitive as it is now. He's got the mentality to sort of the drive and the hunger for it. You've seen him when he's confident, even despite dismal performances. So you never know. And, you know, it's his first season in the Premier League.
I'll go further than that. You know, Didier Drogba had a good couple of seasons at Marseille. He'd come off the back of I think they won the UEFA Cup the year before. And he'd scored goals throughout that campaign. So he'd been playing really at the top end of European football. Okay. Jacko had his season at Villarreal, but it wasn't quite the same. I don't think he was having quite the same exposure. He's about the same age, I suppose, as Drogba was when he first came to us. But I think he's probably a bit less experienced. And as you say, he scored more goals, I think. The only thing I would say is that the competition was much harder for Drogba in that first season.
Yeah. But and also, I'm not saying he's going to be Drogba.
He's a different player.
Yeah. But there is a diamond in the rough there.
Yes.
And if we can get that polished and get the confidence and get some momentum, I think we've got a real player there. And we missed him when he was away during the African Cup.
Well, my opinion keeps changing on him, but I do think, as you say, there's definitely enough there for us to think that in seasons to come, you know, if he continues to develop, you know, he's had a not bad first season, and it can only get better. I would have thought, touch wood. Famous last words.
No. Yeah.
That's what we should call this podcast, really, the famous last words podcast. But all right, let's talk about. Excuse me. Let's talk about, I mean, obviously, Palmer had a great game and we'll talk about him in a second. But Nicholas Jackson, and we've touched on Moises Caicedo as well. They were all significantly more on it than in the Sheffield United game. I mean, Caicedo had a fantastic game after a couple of really not impressive, very impressive games. But I think there's two things to look at here. On the one side, I think we're possibly expecting that every week from a player who cost 115 million. On the other side, we have to remember that obviously the fee, the transfer fee, was nothing to do with him.
Mm.
And also, apparently, he's made more successful ball recoveries this season than he's the highest. He's recovered the ball more than any other player in the Premier League, and he's higher even than the next highest player, who is Declan Rice.
That's because our forwards give it away more than any other.
That's a very good point, well made. But you know, he still needs to get it back, yeah, doesn't he? He still needs to get it back. I mean, he had a really good game. I mean, Mike, I know you touched on the fact that, you know, he's a 115 million player, and we perhaps haven't seen 115 million quid's worth of performances out of him every time. But what have you made of him, and what did you make of him?
I don't think I meant that it was because he was 115 million or whatever it was. I just wonder how that plays within the group.
I see.
Behind the curtain, whether they're even aware of that. I have no idea what goes on. That place is and has been for decades. It's been a sort of place where no light escapes. You get very little knowledge about what actually there are no flies on the wall there that will give you anything. There is the odd rumour, but you really don't know what's happening backstage.
Amazon documentary.
Yes, I know. Yeah, that's what we want, isn't it?
Which we need.
Yeah.
We need cameras in there to follow. Well, I don't really want to know, actually.
No, I don't know.
It gets dull.
And you always get them, you know, they always come out sort of two seasons after it's actually happened. So, you know, you're kind of... it's never right up to date. But
we are blessed with some phenomenal talents.
Yeah.
If they can just lower their egos a tiny bit, just enough to sort of make each other look great. If they could just get that, and give each other that moment, it would be extraordinary to watch. I mean, that would be a hell of a team. I think that's probably true of every team, but we're talking about this team.
But it's it's immaturity It's immaturity as well, and we've sung a song about that every single week about the fact that we're young, they're growing together. It's it's that much harder when you don't have a real strong core of very experienced players. I know we've got one or two, but we haven't got it through the team, so you can expect. Ooh. You can expect hiccups, but it's got to be, there are some expectations that come with those sort of price tags. And again, none of them are the players' fault, but, there's a reason they've been transferred for that amount of money, and some of them haven't managed to sort of yet justify that every week. But let's talk about Cole Palmer, because clearly he's one who has justified probably every quid of his 40 million transfer fee. I mean, he's absolutely, obviously, he's indispensable to the side. He seems now, the thing that I was unsure about with him was that it didn't feel to me like he was taking games by the scruff of the neck, where he's got the ability to do that. And my thing was, he's young, so that's fine. And it felt like people were saying, oh, he absolutely changes the game every week and he's incredible every week. But he's starting to do that. He is starting to do that. He did it against Man U to an extent. He absolutely did it again. I mean, he was brilliant on Monday night. There's no denying it. Signing of the season in the Premier League, do we think? It's difficult to see who. I mean, I suppose, there are.
Can't think of anybody.
I mean, there's some. He's got to be knocking on the door now. I think he's probably a shoo-in for Young Player of the Year. He's got to even be kind of up in the running for Player of the Year, if it wasn't for the fact that Chelsea are languishing in ninth. I think it would be, he'd almost be a shoo-in. But I mean, can we say anything that we haven't already said about him?
I think he's a surprise. I think there's something a bit unlikely about him.
Yes.
And he doesn't necessarily look too dynamic.
No.
Let's say.
And I think that...
And when he turns that on, you know what I mean, Mooch? He just turns that on, and it every single time he's done it, it comes as a surprise. I don't know where I didn't expect it. So I'm thrilled by that. I mean, that is just brilliant.
I think I know where some of your, like, when you say he doesn't take the game by the scruff of the neck, and he's not a player like Gallagher who is running around busting a gut.
Doesn't drive the team.
It's not. That's not. Yeah. That's not his game. And I was watching because when he was sort of breaking into the City, he was the smallest player on the pitch. All throughout his, you know, youth team career, but he kind of just he got there. Mm. He always just was that finesse player. And he when Pep came, he was six. I think okay, is that right?
That might that sounds about right.
I think when Pep came, wow. He was six.
Yeah,
at City.
Wow. Okay, they start him that early. I mean, it's quite possible that they do.
I think
he certainly would have been. Yeah, I'm sure he would have been very young.
How long has Pep been there?
No, hang on. That would mean he's been here. No, that would mean he'd been here for 15 years. He's not been here 15 years.
Maybe I'm talking shit.
There's every chance, ladies and gentlemen.
Surely not. I won't have it.
Maybe not six, but he was probably a ute, wasn't he? He was probably
maybe it was nine. Maybe I've got something wrong. But anyway, it was very young.
Do you know why they parted with him and let us have him?
Because it was excess to their needs. He wanted to go on loan. He didn't want to go on loan. But I think he also always loved Chelsea. That's what I've told.
That's what I've heard. Is that he said, "I can't be doing with these blue moon nonsense anymore. I'm going down south." But, I mean, he's actually. What's interesting is that, which I hadn't known until a couple of weeks ago, is that he was a Man U fan.
Was he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was. I mean, that all came out around the time of the Man U game. He grew up as a United fan, so I was quite surprised. But I think with City, I don't know if he'd had a kind of. I don't know if it ever got to the point with Pep where Pep was actually sort of telling him, "Well, you're going to be third or fourth in the pecking order behind the Fodens and the Bernardo Silvas." And the Dokus and et cetera, et cetera. That's all I can think it was. You know, I want to be playing. I'm good enough to be playing every week, and I want to be playing every week. And it does seem like it's been a tremendous bit of business. And you know, if he keeps developing like he does, as I say, my only thing with him has been that I feel like he's gone missing occasionally in games, but clearly that's. He's cutting that out, and as the team is growing, he is growing. Or maybe it's the other way around. As he is growing and getting more comfortable, the team is growing around him.
Mm.
And what a lovely thing that would be.
Yeah.
What a happy accident, a lovely happy accident that would be. But I mean, and I've actually seen him head the ball twice as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so he headed the ball across the goal in the Sheffield United game. That was the first time I've seen him head it. And he scored with his head this time. So, wonders will never cease.
Yeah, no, he's the business.
He really is.
And he's improving. That's the great thing. If we can hang on to him.
If we can. Well, there's talk of us having to offload a load of players, isn't there?
I mean, there are a whole raft of players that I would have thought would go before him.
And surely we can just do a deal with Saudi and buy. just buy some more players.
Yeah. I mean, I would have thought that it would be, you know, obviously the homegrowns are probably most under threat. You know, I mean, there's still obviously this big cloud hanging over Connor. And we'll talk about finances later on because there's more rumours this week about the difficulties that the
really?
Financial... Yeah.
Well, wasn't that a great moment with Alfie Gilchrist?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, he's another one, you know, he's another one, isn't he? And he's so... I loved how happy he was about it.
Yes.
Watching the screen on the way back. Yeah. Oh.
He would, it was thrilling.
It's how any of us would be, wouldn't it?
100%. 100%. 1,000,000%. I mean, he's, you know, he is one of our own. Somebody pointed out, actually, that he's only something like 6 months younger than Cole Palmer. I mean, what you would, the only thing you would say is that obviously Cole Palmer has had a lot more first team game time than he has. And it's a different position, obviously.
Yeah, I think, you know,
you've got to have to take that into account as well.
You're going to need to be a bit more
of a
lump.
Of course, of course. But he had 100% pass completion, I read somewhere. You know, he's a prime example with the financial issues that we may end up facing. You know, he's another prime example of someone who I could see us having to get shot of because he's homegrown and it's going to be, you know, it's all book, it's all money straight off the book. It's, you know, it's not amortized costs. He's someone we've had since schoolboy days. So
since you were six, apparently.
So it's all profit. He'd all be pure profit. We're skipping forward here, but I mean, there was talk this week about the profit we technically made selling the Chelsea Village hotels is not going to be included in our profit and loss sheet this year because, well, there's an argument that it won't be because Chelsea Football Club sold them to Bluco, I think the name of the company is, which is also part of.
So we're doing a city,
yeah.
But reverse.
Yes, exactly. So we've sold it to another Clear Lake
another
company.
Department.
Yeah.
So they transferred it within the organisation to somebody else. Really,
there's an argument that we may not get the book value of that.
I'm sure we've got lawyers who will argue to the cows going home that
100%
not guilty.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you know, whatever we say about these people, they're not stupid. They're not, you know, they're not entirely devoid of. Well, yeah, actually, you say that. You know, Donald Trump's a billionaire. Yeah. anyway, but I, you know, there has to be concerns that it's such a shame when you say. And look, let's also go back and talk about the defence because Trevor Chalobah has been playing in defence. It was our seventh different centre back pairing of the season. The first in eight games that hasn't actually conceded.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Obviously our defence has been hamstrung by the fact that we've had so many injuries, this, that and the other. But who do you think now
is our first
choice pairing?
Well, I think our first choice pairing is Gusto and Cucurella on the wing backs.
Yeah.
Because they played more games. I don't know. Obviously, we didn't concede.
Yeah.
But I don't think Thiago is our first choice.
Well, as we've said before, he's on his way out. Oh, Real Madrid have gone 1-0 up. Oh, by the way, folks, we are recording on the evening that City are in their quarterfinal second leg. I'm sort of hoping they win that because. Because obviously we've got them at the weekend, so but we'll be keeping an eye on that. Yeah, I think Thiago is I feel like has 1 foot out the door. But Mike, would you be someone who would want? I mean, Trevor Chalobah to me. I mean, he can head the ball, which seems to be, you know.
Oh, he's fine. He's fine. He's good. I think he has good and bad. They've all got this capacity to be absolutely brilliant and then to look. Like they've never kicked a ball in their life. They all seem to have that one way or another. I don't know why that is. It's back to the consistency thing.
Yeah.
But I, you know, whatever Poch is doing with them, he's getting stuff out of them. And I suspect, as with a lot of things, that the football isn't the problem, is that there'd be, you know, personal stuff going on, why they're inconsistent, why they're not always the same. But, what he put out the other night, I saw that and I thought, yeah, that looks like it'll work, you know, as well as it can. And indeed it did.
I mean,
I got to the ground and we were watching them warm up before our team came out, and I was watching Pickford, their goalie, and I was thinking, wonder what he'd cost. Could we get a goalie like that? Because he commands that back four. He tells everybody where they're going to be.
Yeah.
And then I saw the game and I thought, maybe not. After all,
well, funny enough, I was thinking that as I was, I mean, I talk about a game to miss. I I didn't go to the game, and I was driving that night and listening to the game on the radio. And it's funny you should say that. I had exactly the same thought. Oh, if Everton go down, Pickford would probably be available. Pickford's, doesn't make many mistakes. He's a pretty solid keeper. Hasn't made many for England, certainly.
Well, he is.
And then in the last England game, he made an absolute pig's ear of a clearance.
And what he did a moment.
Yeah, and then he did the same, obviously, on Monday night as well. Mm. Now, admittedly, he's slightly hamstrung by having a not terribly successful back four in front of him. But, he certainly did us a favour in that game. And that was a lovely finish as well, to be fair. And I think it was... Oh. Even Cole Palmer has said he slightly shinned it, but you wouldn't. The arc of it was beautiful. You wouldn't have known for it. You wouldn't have known for a moment that it was anything other than completely deliberate. But I feel like Cucurella, chaps. I know what you're saying, Mooch, but for me,
I was joking. I don't think that.
All right.
I'm happy with them.
Yeah.
Gusto as well.
Gusto's, yeah.
Gusto. But
they're both wing backs, let's face it. But, they're not.
Yeah.
I don't think either of them are the world's greatest defenders. I mean, is there an opposite case to put Mike or.
I think Gusto's terrific. I love it when he's on the
pitch. I do think Gusto's a great player, yeah.
And I watch him and he attacks and he'll take the ball a long way. Somebody the other night, I don't know who it was, he suddenly looked like that famous Hazard thing. He took the ball all the way up the pitch, and if he'd scored, it would have been fantastic. But I can't remember which player it was. This is what happens when you get old. But,
I think it might have been Caicedo.
I think it was, actually. Mm. And I think Gusto is excellent. I go on and off Cucurella, slightly because of his haircut, but just slightly annoys me. But
it's implausible, but at least isn't it?
It's implausible. who's your hairdresser, Cucurella? I must get their number. And I could forgive him quite a lot for that pass to Nicholas Jackson.
Yeah.
I suddenly went, oh, yeah. Good. And I used to forgive him quite a lot because he lost the ball a lot, if you remember, in the early games. Mm. But he would always chase them down like a dog and then take the ball off of them and get it back working again. But he did lose it a lot. I'm not sure what's happening there. I think he's a ferocious player, and he's good to have.
He's stepped up when we've needed him this season, and he's filled in on the opposite side. He was a player that we at the start of the season were like, well,
oh yeah,
if he dies, he dies.
But in fairness, he's certainly brought people around from where they were at the end of last season, a bit. I think he had a good start to the season. He's dropped off again, in my humble opinion. But he feels again like a wing back. It does feel like really all of our fullbacks are, they're great on the going forward. They're great on the overlapping. It's the old Tommy Docherty stuff, isn't it, Mike? I mean, you'll remember. You know, it was the Doc who brought in the overlapping fullbacks.
It's wonderful,
and they're both a lot stronger for me in that role than they are defensively, and that can't help whoever the centre back pairing is. So I still don't know who our ideal back four is, but obviously, while Reece James is injured, we're going to play Gusto on the right. And
what's the story with Reece James? Is anybody know? Well, he's coming back.
Yeah, I mean, he's had his hamstring operation, hasn't he? And I know it does seem that his rehabilitation's going okay, but unfortunately, that's all.
I don't
think
there's any rush to have him back for the last game of the season.
No, absolutely. Like,
so it'll just be he's done till preseason.
Yeah, I think he'd been putting off that operation in the hope that he was going to come back and make the Euros squad, but clearly that's no longer going to be a thing. So hopefully he will come back refreshed for pre-season. And
could we get Lauren in instead? She can
not a fullback, but she's got a hell of a strike.
She could come in and do a job.
She's got the family right peg.
She sure has.
She's been
just
a revelation.
Watching them now. Hang on. They're two up against Villa at the moment, the women.
Oh, that's good.
They're ferocious.
So we're at a point now where it's remarkably, considering how much we've, I mean, mate, we've whinged a lot this season, and not unsurprisingly, really, and talked a lot about having to really try to be optimistic. But we're unbeaten in 10. If we win our, in inverted commas, game in hand over the teams, we'd actually be in 7th.
Equal on points with Spurs?
With West Ham. No, sorry, with Newcastle, but behind Newcastle, them on, on goal difference.
Yeah, we can overtake West Ham.
But we'd be ahead of Man U because their goal difference is really poor. We've overtaken our points tally for last season. Cool. Reasons to be cheerful? I mean, the only thing I would say is obviously it does make it that much more frustrating that we threw away Leeds against the two Sheffield worst teams Burnley, in the league. Yeah. You know,
but we won about half our games this season. Woo-hoo! We won about 20 games. I know, I mean, it's not a great thing, but it's, in a season where you think you've been disastrous and you look at it and you find you've won about half your games.
Is it real?
Anyway, it's good. It's not the worst thing ever.
Well, look,
we're not going down.
No, we've... no. And this is, again, it's all relative because, you don't have to go back that far. Well, I suppose it's 30 years now. It doesn't feel like that, but... You know, I was thinking about the kind of early Hoddle, the end of the sort of Ian Porterfield era and the early Hoddle years when we were sort of clambering about. We were 14th a couple of seasons running and 11th one season. It's just that obviously expectations are that much higher. But can we feel, can we genuinely feel like we might actually be good for a European place now?
This year?
Yeah.
This season?
Now, and let me qualify that slightly. There might be 5 Champions League spots available to us this year.
Oh, really?
Yep. It all depends on coefficient. At the moment, Germany is a little bit ahead of us. So a lot actually would depend on the outcome of tonight's games. If the cup winner is someone who qualifies for the Champions League anyway, that place in the Europa League will go back to a league placing, so it could almost be as far down as 8th that we'll get European places, that we'll get European football next year. Would we welcome that though? What do you think, Mike?
Good point. Absolutely good question. Yeah.
I'm full of them.
Well, they pay you the big bucks.
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, if we win on Saturday, which is, I have every expectation of doing.
Excellent.
We would get a place, would we not? Would we not be in position to...
Is that Europa League? Or
that would be... The FA Cup winners will get a Europa League place. Now, obviously, we'll be up against Man United or Coventry in the final, if we did make it through. So,
we've had two finals this season. I mean, come on, guys. This is...
Yeah, no, it's a real bipolar season.
It's just
manic ups and manic downs. Yeah. And it's weird, but it's a lot like, I imagine, most of our report cards at school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just show some promise in some things.
Brilliant at English.
And just disaster.
Shit at physics.
Yeah, it's just... It's
are we half full or are we half empty? What are we? I don't know.
We're on the piss, that's for sure.
I don't know.
We see, my inclination has been to be half empty because of what's gone before, because of the last 20, 25 years. Obviously, it has all been gravy. But I'm also very aware, having been a Chelsea supporter for a very long time, I'm also aware that there was an awful lot of dross before that. And, we're still a hell of a lot luckier now than we were then. But do we think this team is ready for Europe next year? Do you think we could... I'd love to... In many respects, I'd love to be in the Europa Conference League because, A, it's something new for us to win. I'm not saying we would, but it's there for us. And, B, there's nothing like a European away day to Azerbaijan or places like that. But is it something we'd welcome, or do we need to consolidate next year? I mean, obviously, financially, we'd welcome
it. Yes. But also, I think it all depends on the injury situation. Yeah. Because if we had a quite large squad fully fit, will need games for them to, you know, Lavia's played minutes.
Yes.
Not even a full game, probably. And Nkunku, if we do make another signing, which we probably won't, I don't know if we have the money to... to
sell first, I guess.
Yeah. But, there's lots of players there who need games. You know, we've got a load of talent in that front line, and they're going to need to sort of have opportunities. We've got a million and one defenders. Wesley Fofana's back.
Yeah, well, yeah. And we have missed him, let's face it, this year.
You know, there's lots of players who will need minutes. It's just whether they can survive and training and games and get.
Well, let's take the financial aspect out of it. Mike, is it something that you think we would be ready for? Now, I think Mooch makes a very good point. If our full squad was available and fit and healthy...
And we don't have this hoodoo over the bloody physio room.
And obviously there's going to be some wastage during the course of the season. But, you know, at the moment, I feel like our already thinly stretched squad would probably struggle a little bit with a European campaign.
I'd like to see them have a go. I think they'd thrive. I think they'd learn a lot. I think they'd be having to deal with stuff. They're having to deal with being in the Premier League, which I'm told is the toughest league in the world. And gosh, bless you. And but I think they'd thrive. I think the only way is to chuck them at it and see how they do, because we don't know. We didn't know what they've got a year ago, 2 years ago, say, and we don't know what they've got for Europe. I would love to give them a go at Europe in any capacity. I don't care where it is. Just put them out there and put them up against Belgium. Let's see what they do then.
Yeah,
they'll learn. They'll learn very quickly, very quickly.
And you know, if we're playing against some sort of Turkish farmers and we bang out, you know, 9 goals, that's going to give some confidence to some of these players.
I mean, I think at the pointy end, it starts getting, you know, you've got some decent clubs in there. I'm not saying world beaters. I mean, Victoria Plzen from, I say that, I think it's Austrian.
Europe.
Yeah, I think that, Plzen, I think it's Austrian, isn't it? Anyway, Czech, sorry. Czech Republic, of course it is. Czechia. But, you know, Lille are in there, Villa. Obviously, decent side, having a very good season. Fenerbahce and Olympiakos, I'd like to think we could beat the likes of them. PAOK Athens, Club Bruges. I mean, we could go... If we did make the Conference League, I'd be quite confident of us putting it together a really decent run. And, you know, as I say, we all love a European away trip, so why not?
Yeah. Oh,
sounds great to me.
Yeah.
I'd give them a go if they can get that. We're not going to argue.
No, fair point. So one final thing before we round up. I mean, I felt that, particularly after Burnley, Poch was probably under more pressure than, you know, and he has had that quite a lot of pressure throughout the season, but that was probably the point where he was under the most pressure of all, maybe even after, probably even more so than after Sheffield United. So do we have to give him credit for bringing out a much improved performance out of the team? I mean, it's the same players. So do we give him credit for that? Or is it a case of, well, let's, you know, it's a watching brief. Let's see how we do next week. Because as we know, it could all be, you know, we could go back to the Burnley and Sheffield United standards of play next week quite easily.
I don't know. I don't know. How much he can do? Do you know what I mean? Like there's, I think it's down to sort of what we saw on the pitch.
Mm.
There's a limit on what you can do with players who may not be as receptive, and a team who may not be responsive in the same way that you need. And I think he's showing that frustration with some of his. More recent press conferences, you know, like I'm not here to please people and all of that. I do feel for him, I think.
And equally, of course, after the Man U game, there was a massive outpouring of emotion, you know, and it was the most animated we'd seen him at the end of that game when we snatched the late winner, because, you know, at 3-2 down, having been 2-0 up, that would have been an enormous pressure on his job. So clearly he's feeling it a little bit. But I think you're right, Mike. I mean, when players go over the white line, you know, particularly when we haven't, as we've said on many occasions on this pod, we haven't really got players who you would really consider experienced leaders out on the pitch, you know, with one notable exception.
Yes.
We do have to cut in some slack, and we do have to give them a bit of credit, don't we?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, I've got all the same Spursy prejudices that everybody else seems to
very pleased to hear it
go along with, but you know, I think I can't think who else would have done a better job with what there is, and with the egos he's dealing with, and with the
youth.
He's got a team of racehorses there. It's like thoroughbreds, a lot of them, and we don't know their capacity, and he's having to rein all that in and try and make something of it. And we did get a glimpse of it the other night, of what he's up against. So, absolutely cut him slack. We've got to two finals, and that is pretty impressive.
Only one so far. One final, one semi-final. Don't get ahead of yourself.
Yeah, you're quite right. I told you I knew kind of about football, but there we are. So that's a semi-final. All right, let's make a note. And no, I think we do need to cut him slack a bit, because what else can we do, really?
But the people around you as well, the people around you in the ground feel the same? There's not sort of any kind of burning enmity?
No, I don't feel that. But then I am in, you know, I have to shout over to the shed to our and keep the noise down because people here are trying to sleep.
I think that's another point that you sort of raised there. Who else would have done a better job? And I think my instant thought was Jose, but I think Jose may have done a better job with results, but the harmony in a team that is literally cobbled together. And there's no one who's really being scapegoated, or there's no one who's really, even with the stuff that's gone off the field with Thiago's misses and all that, and Jackson having a bit of pressure on him. No, the team seemed fairly well sort of on side. There were rumours that they were potentially... He was potentially losing the dressing room, and there was talk of it, but you don't know how much credence to give that.
I mean, I think that's a very good point, and I think the thing is with Jose that you probably get...
You know there's going to be three players who are they've down tools and want gone.
You'd get a season and a half, maybe a season and a half where everyone was buying into it and it was brilliant, and, you know, maybe we'd overachieve, and then after that everyone would hate him. You know, because that's the cycle. Unfortunately, that's how he goes. You know, he has... He'll get, because he's a great motivator and a great person manager, he'll get the best out of a side for X amount of time, and then, you know, maybe be found out tactically or rub people up the wrong way. Mm. And in a way, microphone drop. He's out. He's left.
Yeah.
He's dropped my mic drop.
Got my moment.
He's in a way, I'm not sure Tuchel isn't sort of too different, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's, I think you're right there. I mean, I love Tuchel for all he's done, but he's not having a...
No. And again, you know, he has 18-month reigns in places, and it all starts very nicely, and then it all
and
goes
players
pear-shaped.
Burn out, and it's,
So, yeah, maybe Pep. Not that Pep was ever likely to be available or want to come to Chelsea, but, you know, maybe he's the only
one. The opportunity to coach Cole Palmer must be quite...
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah, he must... he'd love that, wouldn't he? Yeah.
There was that moment with... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, there was that moment with Potter when, you know, he took over and suddenly, you know, 200 new players arrived and he didn't know what to do with them, quite understandably. And then two and all that. And so we're still in that state, in a way, for Pochettino, I think, because all these players that he's suddenly faced with... have to be accommodated and sifted through and find what they've got and what they can do and what they will do. And we're very fortunate to have some great scorers at the moment. But I think it's a terrifically difficult job for him. So I absolutely think he's doing a good job with what there is and the difficulties that he's facing with the owners and all the rest of it.
I agree. I mean, there's a lot of hot air shouted on Twitter and some in the ground as well. But I hope people are going to, you know, are sort of taking
And between us when...
when things aren't going well, that's true.
Sheffield...
I hope that people are cutting him a tiny bit of slack. And, it's interesting. We've got a terrifically hard, potentially hard set of fixtures coming up. And again, it would just be so Chelsea, so typically Chelsea,
to romp home.
If we had some brilliant results. But we've got, you know, in the next three or four games, we've got City, Arsenal, Villa and Spurs. You know, they're all kind of...
West Ham, Brighton.
Yeah, they're all sort of potentially frightening. Certainly those first four are potentially frightening fixtures. But it could all go either way, as we've already seen. And as you've already alluded to, Mike, we've had some good performances and good results, better results against those teams who come out to play against us a bit. All right, gents. Well, we're going to talk about, Mike, we're going to ask you back if you'll join us, if you're happy to do that for our Manchester City Cup semi-final preview. But in the meantime, I'm going to say thanks so much for joining us again. It's an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
Thanks, guys. It's been so much fun talking to you, and I've learned a lot about football. Yes, I know. I'm getting the hang of this. I'm getting the hang of this thing now.
Thank you. Don't you worry, my friend. You're right up there with us. Mooch, thank you for hosting us, my friend. This has been a joy, and... we will speak soon.
Yes.
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 Right.
Yeah, man, it's great.
Yeah, cool. And all right, chaps, then we'll see you for the preview. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening in. Keep the blue flag flying high.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.